test.
All right, we have mics. Yes.
We didn't used to.
No, you had mics. The streaming wasn't working.
Test.
Okay, good morning. Wednesday, Ash Wednesday today. I appreciate everyone being here. Appreciate all the committee's hard work into the evening last night. We're going to, I think our final call back, unless there's something late breaking today, members, is Department of Transportation. I requested this call back, and particularly the air service. I wanted to talk about state planes, plane usage, charges, who's flying, what it costs, how we can sell one of them, all those kind of things. So anyway, not to frame the conversation that way. But I did. So sorry. So Don, can you call the roll, please? Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Representative Burkhart.
Here.
Representative Connolly.
Here.
Representative Greer.
Here.
Representative Moniz.
Here.
Representative Nicholas.
Here.
Representative Stubson.
Here.
Senator Burns.
Here.
Senator Hastert.
Here.
Senator Perkins.
Excuse.
Senator Wasserberger.
Here.
Chairman Ross?
Here.
Chairman Harshman?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so I had my opening remarks. Go ahead and just introduce yourself for the record, and welcome to the committee. We appreciate you coming back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dennis Byrne. I'm the Aeronautics Administrator with YDOT, and with me is Tori Meisel. He's our Flight Operations Manager and Chief Pilot. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I think the main thing, you know, these new mics that A&I Construction got us just aren't quite like the old ones we had in the Capitol. And so you got to get closer.
Okay.
And
Mr. Chairman, is there a specific question you would like us to answer?
Yes. Let's just, you know, your report. From 2000, I think it was 2014, this question, this was a big, it's been an ongoing topic, as it should be in this committee, and I'm just wondering, so I looked at that and read that report again, and maybe just update the committee, and maybe do we have that as a handout, or do we have any, what do you got for us today? But I wanted to talk about the actual real charges, and then and then also what is charged, and then who's flying, and maybe if you have flight logs, if you brought those today or emailed us and kind of give us an update, kind of what's
Mr.
happening.
Chairman, which report are you referring to, please?
You know, it's a 2014 report. I've got it online. Looks like that. Maybe I can email it. Let me just. You know, I don't think it was distributed to committee this go around. I'm going to see if I can quickly find it. Let's just pause for a minute.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, for reference on SharePoint, in our pre-session materials, there is also a pretty detailed rundown of the passengers and trips under Agency 45.
Okay.
This one?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, did you find a copy of that?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to.
I think we also handed out hard copies of aircraft usage since July through, I think, January 15. I think that's the one that Representative Stepson just mentioned.
This passenger summary here.
Yep, that passenger.
That's what you've got something else. Let's just get everybody to just take a minute to get everybody up here to speed. I'm searching my thousands of. All right, I've got it here. I'm going to send. I've got it right here. Appropriation.
Mr. Chairman, while we're looking, just why don't you just walk us through what planes we have, how old are they, what the mileage is on them? Just tell us a little bit about them.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Tori to talk a little bit about the planes.
Currently, we are operating the two Cessna Encore aircraft.
Both aircraft were manufactured in 2002, so they're coming up on 14 years in service. Just over 5,000 hours. I believe one aircraft maybe is 5,200 hours at this point. The other one about 51, maybe 5,125. Cycles or landings on the aircraft were at about 8,000 on the first one that I spoke of, and then probably about 7,500 on the second. And what that does in perspective for that type of aircraft and the use they're getting, conservatively, I would say that's at a midpoint life on the aircraft. You know, it's not uncommon for an aircraft to fly more than 20,000 hours. So for these to have 5,000, they're going through their first engine overhaul cycle at this point, which a lot of people using the aircraft in that capacity would say that's kind of a defining moment of maybe a midpoint life for an aircraft. You get through the second overhaul and then evaluate where it is. But the aircraft has been out of production now for about 8 years.
The Mr. Chairman, the engine overhaul that's taking place, is that part of the contract for services, or is that an, how does
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the aircraft are maintained under a Pro Parts and a Power Advantage, and both of those are maintenance-type contracts. The Power Advantage is what takes care of the engine program. So over the course of the last roughly 10 years being enrolled in that program, we have paid approximately, and again, I guess give me a little leeway with the exact number, but approximately $700,000 to the engine overhaul per engine. The first engine that has gone through the overhaul, the manufacturer of the engine on the teardown report estimated the cost of the overhaul at about $1.2 million. Now, we don't pay the difference. We're enrolled in that program. So being enrolled in that program is obviously of significant savings at paying it as we go, so to speak. But, yeah, we realize probably about a $400,000 to $450,000 savings on that engine overhaul.
Just Representative Nicholas, are you? Just let's just talk about charges then. So when one of the electeds is on the plane, or one of your engineers, or somebody's on the plane, so the cost, what is it, a cost per hour, per mile? It's in that $1,425, I think, is your charge.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And is that's a charge per what?
That's a charge per hour.
Per hour. So not a landing or a leg or any of that.
Correct. That's per hour.
So that's just per hour. And then?
Flight hour.
But the true cost, just reading your report, that was like, it was $3,300, I think, was real operating cost. And if you put in depreciation, it's like pushing $4,000 an hour. Is that, am I close, or can you correct me on that? It seemed like it's $3,300, $3,800.
Right. Correct, Mr. Chairman. The report that we presented had about a $3,300 hour, and then with the depreciation that was factored in on that, I believe ran about $3,600 to $3,800. The depreciation is a little bit harder to cover or calculate on it. Typically, a business aircraft, which this is a business aircraft, is depreciated over typically a 6-year period. With a heavy bonus on the first year, and that's just the tax rules with it. So, what we tried to do in that report was back that back out and say, if you had looked at it from a day one purchase and you estimated the life of the aircraft to be 25 years, this would be roughly the cost of the aircraft per year on that type of scale, and then tried to back that into the hourly rate. But, when the aircraft were purchased, it wasn't designed that way, so that calculation was a little bit tougher to come up with.
Okay. So you charge everybody the same rate then, and so the subsidized rate then really, so we're charging state agencies fuel, engine parts, those kind of things. So the big other cost then is what, pilots really is what's not. Is that what makes the difference between $1,400 to $3,300?
Mr. Chairman, that is part of the cost. Again, in that was aircraft acquisition or depreciation cost, as well as We have a hangar facility.
Okay.
We do have a fuel farm. And then also I think the overhead or the office space, so to speak, for the pilot group or the flight ops program.
Okay. So, and then how many pilots do we have for those two planes?
Mr. Chairman, currently we have 6 pilots on staff. There's one more coming aboard. We had, since this report, I think, was issued, we have had 2 pilots resigned. We chose not to replace one position, and we are filling one position.
Oh, so you had 8. Okay. And now what's happened to that other position?
Mr. Chairman, I transferred that position over to the Air Service Development Program. There was only one individual in that program. The job was much larger than that, so I transferred that position over to that program.
Is that a generally funded position?
It is not.
It's not? Okay, so that's a commission funded?
It's a legislatively approved and appropriated position.
So
it's being paid with highway funds, correct?
By highway funds. Yeah. Okay. Senator Wasserberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. What was that again? You transferred that person to where?
Mr. Chairman, I transferred it to the Air Service Development Program. They oversee the Air Service Enhancement Program.
And then also, Mr. Chairman,
yep.
Because I have to present this on the floor, this is 2 Cessna Encores. You purchased them in 2004?
2002.
2002. Yeah. And how many hours do you have on them?
Mr. Chairman, again, an approximate, I would say, 5,200 hours on the one aircraft and probably 5,125 on the second.
Thank you.
Okay, is there other, I know we've talked about this before, and I don't want to get into the type of plane, and this plane could be better. I know former Senate chairman who's a pilot, owns some aircraft. None of us have the knowledge that he has of it. But I guess my point is if we were to sell one of the planes and then got into some kind of charter or rent a jet when we needed it. I mean, I think the people of Wyoming, I think that's who we represent. I mean, think that, I think the governor should be in every town. He's our governor. I mean, he should, but I think there's a lot of other flying that goes around, 519 legs in the last 6 months. $500,000 at this reduced cost, which would be really, more than double that, really, if it was a true charge. It'd be about $1.2 million in the last 6 months. And again, it's part of the function of government, but we've had this, and is it really necessary to fly all the time with some of these agencies? And I think if there was more of a cost, we hear, it's more effective to fly up and back than driving. Well, yeah, I've charged it $1,300 an hour, it is, maybe, but not if you're charged the real cost. And I think, at least in my mind, that's how, I have these questions about that and about other agencies, not about the governor specifically, but I think that's an important part. But so anyway, any comments or thoughts on that about if we got into some kind of rent, we got private outfits in the state could charter for trips in state, those kind of things?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go ahead and let Tory comment.
Mr. Chairman, the report that we presented in 2014 did address that and did show some thresholds where that may make sense versus the existing flying that's going on. And I believe the next most economical option was the use of, if I can reference the report.
I've emailed that to all of you, too. It should have just hit your email.
Was the use of a fractional.
Right.
A fractional. And at that point, the threshold of use on a fractional you would want to use that fractional about 200 hours, 250 hours, and similar with the charter outfit. Less than that.
What did we have in the last 6 months? Is that are those minutes, the 346? How many hours in the last 6 minutes? Or 6 months, I should say.
We flew approximately 350 hours in the last six.
And you said that in the report on what page is that again? Is that on?
I believe that's page 8.
Okay. Yeah, it takes you through that whole section, and then page 8, it summarizes it. And you said the break even, or maybe the economy, has about how many hours did you say? You just said it.
Flying less than 200 hours would be more economical on a charter. And then with that, again, like you said, there are outfits within the state. The report addressed that. There are not a lot of options within the state. And the availability to which they are, the report goes on to talk about really not having the 24/7 availability that the department currently has. So there are some more challenges. I would call them more intangibles. They're a little bit harder to quantify when you look at the cost of it. But operating a one aircraft operation versus a two aircraft operation, which we're currently, the bulk of the overhead still exists. So the economies of scale would be there where, you know, theoretically, you could say you could operate four airplanes for pretty much similar overhead, maybe the cost of a couple additional pilots to do it. But the hangar facility, the office facility, the fuel facility, most of the overhead that's associated, which is the subsidized cost, remains the same for one aircraft versus multiple aircraft.
So in the last 6 months then, and I'm just doing simple division, you said 350 hours in the last 6 months, so you divide that by the two planes, is that fair to say?
That's fair to say, 150 hours.
So you're sitting there at 175 hours, less than that 200-hour threshold.
But that's for 6 months, so you'd be 350 hours.
Okay, so per year number.
Right.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, and I'm fighting a cold, so I'm a little cloudy here, but you know, it says based upon the assumptions above, but the assumptions above are the cost of the citation encore is $1,400 an hour, not 38. Is that correct?
Correct.
So, I mean, shouldn't the assumption be the actual cost? And then that would change that number, right? Almost double that number. Well, it would double that number for the break-even point.
Mr. Chairman, I would have to just review that for just a second to make sure that's an accurate statement.
Sure,
I believe it to be true, but.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, that's a generalization, but I think that's what we ought to be looking at is if we're going to determine a break-even point, we need to make sure that the assumptions are correct assumptions. And maybe somewhere I'm missing something, Mr. Chairman, but if the true cost is $3,600 or even the $3,300, we can't have an analysis with an assumption at $1,400 an hour to make a determination and be accurate.
You know, and I'll be very frank on this deal. You know, There's a lot of words being said outside this room, inside this room. A lot of politics being played with phrases and with elderly and K through 12 kids and Wyoming athletics and on and on. And I'm not going to make this deal. That's not the point of this deal with the aircraft, with the two jets that the state of Wyoming owns. That's not the point of this. The point is to find out, is there a better way to do this? Can the private sector do it? I mean, we're looking for efficiencies. We're not going to trade our cars in at $100,000 anymore. We push that out, et cetera, et cetera. And so if there's a better way to do this, can save the state a couple million bucks, I think we're all in on that. You know what I mean? And and still provide that service to our constituents, and particularly with our governor, to be available to the people. And if I look at all these other agencies who are paying that $1,300 an hour, it's hard to convince me, I guess. And so,
Mr. Chairman, if I may just address that just a little bit. I agree absolutely that the state needs to be conservative, and we need to approach this with the thought that revenues are where they are right now. People are still going to have to travel, and they're going to be traveling by car. That is going to extend the time by which they're out and not doing the job. When you're in a car, you're not productive. You have to drive 8 hours from Cheyenne, 7 hours to Cheyenne to Jackson. That's a 3-hour meeting is now almost a 3-day trip. So there are efficiencies to be gained that we need to consider beyond just the cost of the aircraft here. Those things were taken into account in this report. And I understand, Mr. Chairman, the point that you're trying to make, which is why we make every effort to operate those aircraft at the most efficient manner we can. We buy wholesale fuel. We fly the right flight profiles to make sure that we're using the least amount of fuel and meeting the highest levels of efficiency. Mr. Chairman, I don't think that there's a couple of million dollars to be saved here. I just don't know where that would be, certainly not in the long term. Now, these aircraft are 14 years old or about 14 years old, and we have no plans of replacing these aircraft anytime soon. So if these aircraft are effectively depreciated at this point. So, those rates, that depreciation rate especially, which accounts for the biggest part of the 3,600 increase, isn't necessarily accurate when taken over the life of the entire aircraft and how long we would use it.
I have just depreciation is only about 400. I have that, the fuel engine parts at 1425, sure. And then when the pilots, the hangar facility, all that takes it to 3,300, and then just 3,300 to 3,700 on depreciation. That's the numbers I glean from this. So the depreciation is just a small part,
sure,
of it. Is that?
Is that true?
That would be.
Where are we at? Mr. Chairman, I
think
believe
we heard that earlier.
That's true. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, back to the previous question. The assumption is based on that number, the 1400 number, as a direct cost, meaning the fuel, the maintenance. But the comparison was done with the depreciation factor involved. So it was based on the 3900 number.
Basing against the other
alternatives.
The other alternative,
because it was meant to be an apples to apples type comparison,
right,
or as true as we could do.
Mr. Chairman, now how do I see that in the report? Forgive me, but I'm just one of those guys. I like to see it.
Mr. Chairman, the description or where the financials came from is towards the back of the report. Starting maybe about page 17.
I think the page numbering ends at 16, Mr. Chairman, so it would follow.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Conley?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I've got a different kind of question. Given the economies of scales that you just talked about and the lack of an alternative charter service if needed, I'm curious if the state ever considered kind of renting the plane when it's not in use and recouping some of the money.
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. And it kind of goes back to the discussion as far as where the rate was developed. For the state to actually charge full cost operation and then also make the aircraft available to the public as in a public charter type outfit, the state would have to obtain what would be called a Part 135 operating certificate. And that's what the FAA uses to basically license an operator to sell to the public. And again, typically when you get into charging full cost operation, that's where the FAA steps in to say, are you a for-profit operation or are you supporting a business-type operation? So I guess to that point, I think at one point there was some discussion trying to obtain a 135 operating certificate. And again, I apologize, as well before my time. But in the end, then the state effectively becomes competing with private sector for air service.
follow up? But I think part of your comments before is that there really isn't much option in terms of private air service. And I'm just curious, especially today on the eastern part of the state, that there really could be the need for more air service that is kind of flying, for example, between Cheyenne and Gillette.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I would agree. I think that's a good discussion. I don't necessarily know that this would be the right aircraft for that type of operation, considering multiple legs per day. It's certainly something that could be examined, but for this department to get into public air service, I don't think that's quite the intent of where it was established.
Senator Burns.
I also think there's a bald-headed senator down the hall that might not be happy about the state getting him a charter service. I'm sorry, but I missed it. How did you arrive at the 1,400 per hour charge?
The 1,400, Mr. Chairman, the $1,400 an hour charge is based on fuel and maintenance costs, effectively consumable costs, or what's referred to as the direct operating cost of the aircraft. So basically what the aircraft consumes per hour, that's what we're trying to recoup in the cost or the charge.
So if we were to sell a plane, it talks about the value of them. Is it $6 million or is it $3 million? What page was that on? One of the, if we were able to sell one of them.
Mr. Chairman, we can find the page reference. The approximate value, or what the report based the value on, was about $2.5 million per aircraft, so a total of $5 million between the two. And again, personal opinion, I think that could vary as much as about $500,000 depending on the buyer.
Okay, so say $2.5 million, and then what would we operate with? Four pilots then? Three or four?
Mr. Chairman, to obtain the 24/7 coverage, we would probably have to have a minimum of five pilots to do that. Maybe four, but
seven to five. Okay. Okay, and then subsidized costs on one of those. If you are, so you have 350 hours a year on one of those planes, and the subsidized charges are about $2,000 an hour, right? Something to that effect. So there's some savings probably per biennium, probably pushing $4 or $5 million.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's
maybe a couple million.
To do the assumption that if one aircraft were to leave, we would fly half the number of hours. I think what you would see with that is that one aircraft would fly considerably more. Now, what that number is, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then obviously the availability, if that aircraft is out on a flight, to be available to the elected officials as needed. We would have concern with that as well. Currently, we're operating on a business day, Monday through Friday. Both aircraft are out about 40, maybe 42% of the time right now. So,
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
If we were to go down to one aircraft and lose two pilots, the two pilots and the salaries and benefits associated would be where most of your cost savings would be, keeping in mind that the overhead, as Tory mentioned early, wouldn't change that much. It wouldn't decrease that much, other than the pilots going from two to one. So I'm not sure that we would be approaching anywhere near $2 million a year.
So, Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
So I was looking through some of the cost analysis. And I'm not going to go into all my questions, but one did stand out. It was seven pilots, annual cost of $500,000. Is that seems low to me, but maybe you're getting a good deal from those guys.
No, Mr. Chairman, I think the cost analysis was based on one aircraft, so you would double that number.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at that number. It says seven pilots, so that's why I asked the question.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just going to do some quick math in my head here. If you give me just a second, I don't think we have the actual salaries here, or do we? What's the average pilot salary, do you think? A straight salary, Mr. Chairman, on average would be about $420,000 plus whatever the benefits associated with those seven positions would be. Straight salary on average would be about $420,000 for seven pilots, $420,000 a year for seven pilots. And then whatever the benefit load is.
Well, at 25-30%.
At least that, Mr. Chairman.
At least, yeah. So. So 650, 675, somewhere in there. Per year. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Well, we anything else that we appreciate? Just kind of the update. I think it's all.
Mr. Chairman, from my perspective, I don't have anything else to share unless there's something you want to share.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, you have a copy of the report.
We do.
Would you like us to send a hard copy to you, or?
I think we're good. I think we've got electronically. We're. You everybody good?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like a hard copy.
Senator Wasserberger would like a hard copy of that. Yep. And then. Okay. Anything else, committee? For why we've got. Well, we appreciate you coming over this morning, and everybody's busy, and appreciate you taking time out to come on over. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Okay, we're going to take just a short 5-minute stretch, kind of get reoriented, and then we'll get back on some budget issues.
There. Now it's moving, so it's not on mute. Your microphone's on.
If the microphones are on. Okay. Welcome back to the Appropriations Committee. It's probably the longest five-minute break we've had since we started in December, and appreciate everybody's patience. So what we'd like to do, members, is really to somehow finish this up and wrap it up today. There's a few technical errors that we know about. There's a few little cleanup items, I'd call them. And, but we're just going to work, take a motion on the bill, and we'll start working the bill page by page. We've had our public comment on the bill. It's a little bit unique in this committee. That comes during the markup process. So we won't have public comment today on the bill. And, so that's how that'll go. I think the first thing I'd like to address, though, with all the members is really the global cuts issue. And I think if you're interested in changing the global cuts, either by adding more to it or pulling some of it back, I think the time to do that would be up front. And because I don't think we want to go in, it's too much work. This bill will never get done.
Line by line.
So I think the way, let's say, hey, I want the penny plan to be the half penny plan. Well, that might be $12 million. We can add $12 million in one paragraph. In Section 300, it's doubtful that the governor would veto more money in the bill. And so those kind of, or if you wanted to cut more, those kind of things, that's how it would have to go. Unless there's specific reductions to a program in an agency that you're, that you want to reduce, those kind of things. But as far as global, so I'm going to, first of all, we'll just take a motion on the bill.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Moved by Mr. Co-Chair. Second by Representative Burkhart.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, so let's talk about global reductions. Okay, Representative Nicholas.
Well, my first question, I just want to double check with Don to figure out to make sure that the global cuts that we did get everybody and kind of clarify who all gets it and if it's doubled on a few agencies and if there's a few that don't. I know for example, the judiciary, I know that we did to the Supreme Court, but then we didn't do really anything to the district courts, and I think we're going to address that in a bit when we get to it. But if there's any of those things that we missed, what are they, and just maybe just a quick scenario of where we're at on that.
I think the only one was really exempted was Department of Health.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, that's correct. The only entity of general funds that was exempted was the Department of Health. Those entities that are not supported by general funds, be it the Oil and Gas Commission, Public Service Commission, any of the boards and commissions, were not impacted positively or negatively by any global action. You have some unique circumstances in two agencies, Department of Enterprise Technology Services and Department of Education, where they were taking it off of the exception request as opposed to the standard budget request. In truth, that makes a very limited difference depending on which way you calculate it. The Department of Education also received a like amount of global reductions to their school foundation program funds as well as their general funds. That's not a double hit. That's two different revenue streams. And you have some what I'll call unusual situations where a entity, because of the way they're funded, may receive larger or smaller percentage reduction cuts. So, for example, the Pipeline Authority and the Infrastructure Authority, they do not have any 100 series. Those employees are 900 series contract employees. So when you cut 5% of the 900 series, they took it out of that line item. That line item is not only salaries. They have external contracts with advisors and government relations officials and consultants and the like. But it does treat them a little bit differently.
And so just to follow up on that, with ETS, the way that we came back around, even though it's through exception budget because of zero-based budgeting, they're still getting the equivalent cuts in terms of 10%, 5%.
Mr. Chairman, may I add something to you? And also, Representative Nicholas, I just wanted to add on to what Don said about the way that we had to make all of the global cuts. If we had taken into – we had to make a decision on how to do that, and I believe we brought it to your attention on how we intended to do that, is to make those global cuts to the standard budget, and then anything that the committee did after that came on subsequent, because if we were trying to say, here's where we started, here's what the governor did, here's what JAC did, and then we did the 10% cuts, it wouldn't have been able to flow. We wouldn't have been able to maintain consistency. So in order to be consistent, we applied that across all agencies. And then the second thing, Mr. Chairman, that I wanted to add was, although the $1.1 million was subtracted from the Supreme Court 101 budget, the intention we believed was that it would be the cut to the judicial branch, and the language in the superflex section, as Don calls it, for the judicial branch, section 324, does refer to the fact that the judicial branch has the opportunity to work the Supreme Court in conjunction with the district court budget review committee in order to make those cuts across all the courts.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
Just going back to the first point, Don was discussing on, you know, how we applied the global cuts and then went to the specific cuts. I assume there'll be floor action on certain parts of the budget, and so I think we have to be very clear that floor action, an increase or decrease, is applied the same way, and is that something that we need to address up front? Or is that a policy decision for JAC? What do we need to do to make sure we're consistent?
Mr. Chairman, we have visited before any markup started, really before the hearing started, with leadership of both houses on, and this committee has powers and ability and time that candidly is not provided to the floors. So in many cases, when the floor wishes to cut more or add back more, they will certainly have an opportunity to do so, but the amendment will be written differently. In more cases than not, it will be written as a Section 300, adding back $5 million or deducting back $5 million, or being specific to agencies. The problem with a global amendment on the floor is it changes every line in the budget, and then every subsequent amendment must amend that amendment as opposed to amending the bill. So
it's unworkable.
That's the procedural complication.
Yeah. Okay. Any other?
And just to flesh that out, with those global cuts, Don, what's the total amount that we have? What that comes to now?
Penny plan was 27. And the others take it up to 38. The travel, the vehicles.
Yeah. Just walk through the numbers if you would. I don't have it on my.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the penny plan, as it's referred to, is a $2.3 million reduction.
20. Are you?
28, excuse me. I'll read the whole number. $28,270,477. $28,270,477. The reduction to 900 series is $7,222,712. And the reduction to travel is $1,120,042. And the reduction to permanently assigned vehicles is $203,601. There was two add-backs, if you will, who were not subject to this. That was the Department of Transportation, Surface Transportation. I believe it was a $690,000 cut that the global cuts would have had an impact, but you cut them by $10 million in lieu of that $690,000, so they were not affected by the 1.5%. And the second area where that was essentially held exempt is the family literacy program. Because you cut all of it, you can't cut 105% of it.
And with regards to the family literacy, what was the total amount cut for all of family literacy?
Mr. Chairman, that was $3,245,961.
Maybe
Absolutely. And one more just quick point of information. Several of you have asked me to remind you. I won't mention the legislator's name, but I will bring up the topic if anyone wants to make a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to change I have a motion that we back out of our global amendment regarding the 900 series.
Okay, so just eliminate that, which is 7,222,000, that number that was just referenced. Okay, is there a second?
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We heard yesterday from the Treasurer's Office, but I've also heard from other agencies that have, you know, significant amount of money in the 900 series. That global cut is preventing them from doing the contracts that they have had up to this point in time. For example, the Public Defender's Office, that's how they hire their contract attorneys. And so we didn't talk specifically about each of those contracts. It was simply a global cut. And I think that it would be far more prudent of us to go through those individually rather than the global cut that we have. So I'd like to restore it.
Okay. Any other discussion? Representative Greer.
Mr. Chair, I just want a quick comment. I disagree with that statement. We went to each agency, each unit, and we discussed every line item. And we looked at every 900 series, knowing full well that we had the global cut, and we had that discussion many times over during the last 2 months. So I'm sorry, Representative Conley, I don't agree with that statement. We gave that the scrutiny it deserved.
Okay, any other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nicholas.
Well, I understand that there are folks or entities where the 900 series cut may actually be too deep. And that's specifically why we created this superflex through the governor's office, so that they can go both to unit, they can go to series, they can go to agency, and they actually can go cross-agency to find monies in order to fill those gaps. Because in point of fact, we can't go to every single contract and say, hey, because we just don't have the time. We could be here for 6 months if we did that. So we created a system that is supposed to protect that, and if it's done properly, then they will be protected. And we certainly don't want to take away public defenders where they're needed and where it's obligated or where it's constitutionally necessary. Our intent was to fix that problem.
Okay. Any other discussion? Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Representative Nicholas that we didn't go over every contract, and every contract would have taken us 6 months. That being said, what I am afraid of is that we do have so many cuts to the 900 series that are constitutionally or statutorily mandated for those particular agencies that the governor's super flex authority will be taken up with simply meeting those constitutional and statutory obligations. And so I think we need to back out of this particular global cut.
Okay. All right. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That motion has failed. Okay. Now, the first four pages are all definitions. Okay, moving to section 2 of the budget on page 5, Office of the Governor. Are there any amendments? Senator Perkins.
Page 5, line 6, that we restore $10,000 to the $180,000 figure on tribal liaison.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. We understand the issue. It's cut in half and then cut global cut, so it was different. This is one-year funding. Is that correct? Is that how the footnote reads? I just want to be clear on that. See, that seemed like we had that discussion.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
It's one-year funding because we want to make sure we'll get back and get it right. Okay. So here's the motion. Any more discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, that's been adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nicholas.
Just going back and going because it may be a global concept. If we wanted to require that the use of the airplane is for all agencies, would we do that when we get to aeronautics?
YDOT, yeah. Okay. I have a motion on the governor's office, and it's simply to restore, and frankly, I had it in my notes and missed it when we were doing markup, but it would be $200,000 for the biennium to restore the coal port, and ought to call it the coal port fund. Now, that fund could be used for advocacy. In the past, we called it the coal port litigation fund. I think we want to call it just the coal port fund. Obviously, advocacy, litigation, those things. And what we've done in the past biennium, I think, has been very useful. And this is an important deal and important for our state. And so, and again, I had it in my notes and just forgot. Is there a second?
Mr. Chair.
It's been seconded by Representative Burkhardt. Discussion. Representative Nicholas.
Don, could you clarify this? Because I thought we took that and we wrapped it up into a kind of a overall.
Into the $17 million.
So it's in there, but it's just not identified as a specific coal ports anymore. That was my recollection.
I think, yeah, you're talking about the 300 series on the value-added energy plans.
Yeah, and that's right. And I think that
that's in the end of the bill. Maybe you can see that in there and see. But I think also, though, the Attorney General, I mean, it's just, I think this, go ahead, Mr. Co-Chair.
Looking for that question?
You bet.
Is the $200,000 for the biennium?
It is, Mr. Chairman.
So it's $100,000 a year?
Yeah.
And how much do we have in that before?
Not sure.
I don't think it was quite that much, but.
Okay. We'll find out here quickly.
I'm pretty sure it's in there.
Mr. Chairman, there was $100,000 in deep water ports, which I think was the same idea as coal ports in the 15-16, but it was one time, so it came back in at zero, and there were no additional funds recommended by the governor for that purpose.
And I think so that's where we're at on that. And if you want to adjust the number, members, but I think it's important, too, as it's a unit in the governor's office, I think is an important piece of this, and it gives our chief executive, who is working on these this issue, the ability for that. So, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I would, I don't know if it's friendly or not, but suggest that it be similar to what we did in 15-16, which was $100,000.
Okay, that's friendly, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so the amendment's $100,000 in the coal port fund in the governor's office. Any more discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's been adopted. Okay, any other amendments to Agency 1 or Section 1 of this bill? Section 001, Office of the Governor. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, are we voting on each section?
No. I don't think we have to vote on each section, just like any other bill. I'm checking my notes, frankly, too, to make sure I haven't.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Vice President Perkins.
Thank you. Don, just remember, I have a vague recollection we did coal ports before that there was a footnote associated with that. Is this...
And I think it was called Coal Port Litigation Fund. But I think this would be more just, as I expressed in the motion about litigation, advocacy, those kind of things. So
that's fine.
I think staff will get that.
Okay. I'm not interested in the footnote then. I think besides that, with the super flex that we have, I don't know that it makes that much difference.
The next issue I think I want to bring up to the committee, and I'm going to bring an amendment to the governor's office. And, you know, you go here in town, and we have a new business in town. It's 250 jobs. And I can't name, obviously, and you know probably who I'm talking, kind of a flourishing industry in Wyoming. And I think there's opportunities still out there that people recognize that Wyoming's a great place to do business, great place to raise families, great place to send your kids to school. And so all those things out there. And while we're gone, this will be the – if we don't have some action, this will be the first budget that we really haven't set aside a certain amount of money that the governor could use for a loan or a recruitment type things. First time probably in 10 years. And so I want to talk to the committee about that. And I just think we could put whatever parameters we want on it, but I'd like to set aside a certain amount of money. It'd have to come from the LSRA. Maybe $20 million, Mr. Co-Chair, is what I'm thinking. And you know, we've done this. I don't know that we've ever spent it, frankly. Maybe one time we've spent a little bit of it on recruiting of another large corporation here. But so I'd just like to keep that policy that we've had or that practice kind of going. I think it's been valuable. There's 250 people working in Cheyenne today in a manufacturing plant that weren't here 4 years ago. So,
Mr. Chair,
my motion then, I'll just make my motion, is to add $20 million into that large project fund, similar to what we've done in the past, and we have the language for that. And that money would have to come out of the LSRA.
I'd second that.
Mr. Chair, can you tell us what it was in 15-16 and where it was located? You said we had it in the past, so what is this replacing? Can you tell us where that is?
Hang on just...
Mr. Chairman, I believe it appeared, or the language associated with it appeared in the Business Council large project account. Mr. Chairman, the structure for that is you appropriated around numbers $40 million for business-ready communities. I think I believe that the projects that the chairman is speaking of had a little different parameters or special parameters, such as the large projects. You've done it for data center recruitment, and so they have some additional parameters.
It's the large project parameters, and it's is it 10 or 20 million that's within the business council?
I think it was like 20.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that was the Amendment 4 legislation that we brought, that set up, had the parameters, the idea that the money be available for a loan with everything being fully vetted. How is that different than what you're talking about? And then second of all, is there still a funding source for that amendment? I call it Amendment 4 plan. But, I mean, I'm completely confused right now. Are we doubling up? What's going on here?
You're talking about the Amendment 4 process that we passed last year. That's for another project that we've got out there. This is more some of these projects of opportunities that might come when we're gone. And
Mr. Chairman, that whole Amendment 4 outline, I have to go back through and read that legislation again. But that's just sitting there right now to be utilized if the opportunity comes up.
Yeah. Okay.
That's correct. That money was not utilized.
And it wasn't utilized, that's
but
right.
But it's a different parameter than what we authorized before for a governor outside of a loan thing. This is for recruitment. But my concern is that if it's in the business council, there needs to be some sideboard, and that it has to be approved by the governor, not the business council.
So Mr. Chairman, we're creating another pot?
No, Representative Greer, I think it's similar to what we've done. We've done this with large natural gas projects that we thought were going to come, gas to liquid projects, those kind of things. So we've done this in the past budgets. And my point is that, you know, if maybe the world's largest arms maker wants to move to Wyoming, and we want to be able to make sure that we have some amount to kind of help recruit, do whatever to make that. That might bring thousands of jobs. We don't know. And, you know, it might very well sit there and not any of it be used. Most of the time it does, just sit there.
Mr. Chair, I'm curious, when you say help recruit, what are the parameters on the use of the funds? I mean, in terms of going out and trying to find these folks, or is it only if they show up and they say, we've got a deal for you? I mean, how do you structure that? So I would like to see what we've done in the past other than the Amendment 4 stuff, just to know what we're talking about and so we can read the language.
Yeah. Senator Burns?
First of all, I'm trying to figure out why you're bringing this in the office of the governor. And if we're going to do something like this, why do we have a business council in the first place? This is exactly the sort of thing the business council was created for. Now, if you want to add this money, for this particular purpose to the business council and put some sideboards on it, as the Senate chair says, governors, it still seems like we should be dealing with this when we get to the business council, not in the governor's office.
Well, Senator Burns, you make a good point. I mean, I think it's an either-or issue. I think it's much like we did with the energy plan and some of the work we did through the pipeline authority. Now it's through the governor's office working through the pipeline. I guess that's my idea, is that the governor's office would really be the driver on this. He's the one that meets with business leaders all around the country on these recruitment efforts. So that's my thinking on it. So I think your idea would work as well. I mean,
Mr. Chairman, there was a footnote last year that was different than the Amendment 4. The Amendment 4 is limited to loans, and that program, you're correct, still has $25 million available for that. The large project fund in the 2015-16 biennium was a footnote to the Business Council, and it appears there was about $20 million appropriated. Now, some of that was carryover money, and $10 million was new, but bottom line is about $10
million. Mr. Chairman, that was appropriated to the Business Council. Okay, so then I'm questioning, how can we appropriate that as to the governor's office? Because we have to use the Business Council because of constitutional restraints to vet these things. So how can we do that out of the governor's office?
Representative Gurr, I think the idea is just, again, or the governor would be kind of the actor on that, and but working with the Business Council, there's no doubt. I mean, you have to do it that way. But, again, the example I talked about earlier with the Pipeline Authority. And maybe it does fit better in the Business Council. And maybe we can just take it up when we get there. Okay. So I'll just pull that back. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any further amendments? Go ahead.
I have an amendment. What I'd like to do is, you know, we've given the governor $1 million to develop the Wyoming Energy Strategy Initiative. And we've done that through the years. And I would suggest that $200,000 that we just gave to Deep Ports that comes out of part of that $1 million, because that's what that $1 million is for, and we just designate it. So that way we don't have to add an additional $200,000 from the budget.
I think we cut.
And so I'll make the motion that we out of that $1 million energy strategy initiative, that $200,000 goes to the Deep Port. The $100,000. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Well, give us the history on that. I don't think there's $1 million for the energy strategy. What is?
Is that gone or is that still there?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, the governor did request that. I don't believe you approved it. You did carry over some amount in the ITC money, that 17.25, any unexpended, unobligated funds from the 15-16 biennium, of which there was money in there, I believe, at $1 million for the energy policy plan. I don't know how much of that has been expended. Mr. Chairman, the way I would anticipate it would be in Section 303, which is the carryover of the 17.125, and you would designate $100,000 of any unobligated remaining balance shall be used for coal ports.
Second.
on page 5. Okay, flipping over. Page 6, section 2. Any amendments? Okay. Page 3, or page 7, section 3. Yeah, go ahead.
With regards to the Secretary of State, we had that AWAC. Was there a problem with that? I can't recall. Did we cut the AWAC?
Mr. Chairman, yes, you did cut the AWAC, and you cut the funds that the Secretary of State proposed to use to support it.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
I just want to remember. I mean, my recollection was, I don't have my budget book up in front of me right now, but initially there were two initiatives that we had budgeted for, and I thought they were like $42,000 apiece or something like that, and one of those initiatives obviously is now, that failed from the news reports, that failed a week or so ago to have the appropriate number of. Do we need to make that adjustment, or has already been taken care of?
It's the right number, I think. 72 is the right number.
72 is the right number?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Any amendments on page 7, section 3, state auditor? Section 4, state treasurer?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure how to make this as a motion, but to build on Representative Nicholas's question yesterday, in their 901 series professional fees, that they be directed to take as much of that out of the investment account as they can. I don't know what that number would be. They never gave it to us, but to, instead of general funds.
Okay, is there a second? Second by Representative Nicholas. Okay, further discussion.
As you recall, this is the bank holding fees. He broke them down into two different components. And one, he said, was used for the management of the overall funds, whereas the other didn't. And the discussion was that regardless of it, at the end of the day, it may impact the general fund. But I do think it may also benefit at least the goldenrod, if we take it off, or I guess my question is, does it benefit the goldenrod? If for those particular funds, banking fees, that it goes through the investment account.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, it's been our practice, and they did try to do this similarly about 2 years ago, to put their investment staff on the investment income as opposed to the general fund. The way we elected to, the way we did profile that was we took a reduction in appropriation and a like reduction in revenue. So it had a net zero impact to the bottom line.
Okay, go ahead, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, as I recall, there was a depository bank portion, which was probably not suitable, but then there was the custodial banking fees.
That's correct.
Yes. And I believe that was about an $87,000 cut as a result of the global cut. I think that's what you're trying to get at, I suppose.
So,
not?
I don't think so.
What you have is that $560,000 split into two categories. One was the custodial fees, which you need that with the security transactions. That one was whatever the custodial fee number was. I don't remember what that number was, but whatever the custodial fee number was might have been appropriate to move that number into the and have it paid from investment income. The other depository fees were not. The $87,000 was simply part of the global reductions, and so the question was whether or not, so that the $87,000 was only a part of the global reductions, and so they were worried that they would have insufficient numbers to satisfy their contracts, for which they don't have yet.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, what I'm getting at is not to go back and redo the global cut, to leave it at the $87,000, but give them direction as much as possible on the custodial fees. I think that's the one I want. To take the money out of the investments, the returns. I mean, we all do that with, you know, our own bank accounts and everything, just have it taken out of the account when we pay those fees. I think the treasurer could do the same thing.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, it's only a direction. That's so. I guess that would go as a footnote.
Yeah. Okay. Senator Perkins.
Mr. Chairman, I think what happens is that down below it'll reduce general funds by a certain amount, but it'll get the special revenue. There'll be the special revenue fund will capture the balance. And I don't know if we've got those numbers from yesterday or not, but we didn't. But I mean,
Mr. Chairman,
Deputy
that's
Director
correct.
Knew him.
Don, what was that?
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. The senator is correct. If we had a number and that's what they would offset in the general fund and the special revenue codes. But I believe in this instance, it's just a footnote and we wouldn't be making any adjustments to the monetary line items.
Okay. This is Senator Perkins.
I'll defer to Representative.
Representative Nicholas.
The one thing it would do was I think it would assist the treasurer in terms of him needing to use the superflex to pay for those extra $300,000 or $400,000 in contracts. So it actually would be a benefit for him in a bookkeeping sense.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator.
If all you did is footnote it and you don't remove the general fund number, I don't know why we would do that. Otherwise, he's going to be able to deduct custodial funds from the investment income, but he'll still have that same amount in general fund money available that's been appropriated under the. If you're going to do that, you need to make the fund adjustment.
Yeah, I think that's correct.
Yes.
That's not a proposal. That's just a comment.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, that is the intent of what I...
Why don't you restate the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, that the footnote direct the state treasurer to take as much of the custodial funds as possible, whatever that number is, out of the investments, not out of general funds, and to adjust... it to come out of that special revenue source and thus reduce the general fund by that amount of money. Okay. I think that's...
Mr. Chairman, may I suggest one minor change to that, and rather as much as possible in substitute in as appropriate.
That would be a friendly amendment.
It's pretty friendly.
Don, does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, at the end of the day, we're going to need a number, and we're going to need it within hours, not days, in order to prepare it.
Yeah, I think you put a placeholder in there pretty easily that you put a phone call.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That motion has failed. Okay. Any other amendments on agency four? There's no five in there?
No, Mr. Chairman, as part of the agency reorganization went into 206.
Or 206, thank you. Agency six on page eight, A and I, any amendments? Okay, bottom of page nine, the Wyoming Military Department, heading over to page 10. Any amendments? Page 11 at the top, Section 8, Office of Public Defender. Section 9, Wyoming Pipeline Authority. Page 12, Department of Ag.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
I believe a member was interested in the predatory.
Yeah, there's really two... There's two parts to this predator management. I think there's two units in there in this, and I don't have it pulled up yet, but I think, and so what unit, I think the whole thing really, I'm interested in this whole contract coyote killing, flying around in airplanes. Got guys out there today shooting coyotes making more than kindergarten teachers flying around on chartered airplanes. And I think it's like a lot of programs in state government, it's got its purpose. I mean, we're kids. That was a good thing. And I think there's a lot of ways this could be accomplished. And I think like a lot of government programs, it's just grown and grown and grown. And I'm not sure there's even a strong accountability where all the money is spent. And so this is one I think could be accomplished. The mission could be accomplished on these predators with really half the money. And you look at the dollar amount, it's a tremendous amount of money. And it's $6.4 million, I think, in the predator management in those two units. And so I'd propose to cut that down by $2 million. Should probably cut it more, but I'd like to make a proposal to cut that $6.479 by $2 million. Okay, any other discussion? It's been seconded. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I respectfully oppose your amendment. This program does a lot of good. We have a considerable amount of predation up around the park area. I'm aware of just one rancher alone has had over $200,000 in damage to predation just recently, and some of our legislators are getting a lot of pressure to do more, let alone less. And I think it's a fairly good program, and I would oppose this motion.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have had the opportunity to look into that issue, and I read that letter with great interest. And I'm not sure what the right thing to do is, but at this time I'm going to oppose it because the letter was unsigned. The person was anonymous. And so I'm not sure that that's necessary. That could have been from a member of the Sierra Club for all we know. So I guess I'm not supposed to say that.
Mr. Chairman,
I think the issues, Senator Wasserberger, is really just like all government programs. They kind of take off and they just start growing, and in good times we just keep adding to them, so that's it. So that's where the kind of pull back. I think Representative Greer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to oppose this amendment too, and for a couple reasons. We've applied to global cuts. And two is that cuts here may be appropriate, but we have not done our research to find out if that's appropriate. We don't have the information in front of us to make an informed decision. And there are certain areas of the state where these funds are absolutely necessary. And they're absolutely necessary for the overall balance of how we manage the state. And this is just one of the components, one of those blocks that help keep that balance between our various industries. And so, maybe we can look at this over the summer, and maybe it's appropriate, but I can't vote for this right now.
Okay, any other discussion?
Senator Chairman. Burns.
Mr. Chairman, speaking in favor of the motion, I think I'm just going by my memory here, but I think it was my freshman year in the Senate that was the first time the state actually decided to spend some money on this. Up to that point, this was a fund that was kind of like the brand inspectors had been. This is something the ranchers themselves was paying for. And so it was only about 12 years ago that the state actually started getting into this at all. And I think it was at about $2 million. So the amount of money being spent on this has since tripled. In addition, I remember quite extensive talks given by the tall senator from Natrona County, who's been here the longest, and he's a rancher, and he'll tell you that this is mostly coyotes that we're talking about, because there are already funds for wolf and bear deprivation when you get up around the park. And he'll tell you the more of them you shoot, the more they breed, and they actually have their own reaction to depredation. Now, the amount of money we've spent on this has tripled, and in fact, the problem is as bad as it ever was. So I'm going to speak in favor of this motion,
Mr. Chairman,
see what happens.
Okay, Senator Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Having spent half my life as a wool grower, I can tell you that spending money on coyotes and their increase is well worth the the money, and Wyoming in the 50s, 60s, and 70s was the number two wool producer state in the United States, and second only to Texas. And our wool industry is not even close to that anymore. In fact, most of the ranchers have gotten out because of the coyote issue. And so, quite frankly, their numbers as producers have gone down significantly. And the only reason they're in this is because of help from us. So I think it needs to be studied, and I don't disagree with what you're trying to do. It's just that I'm not real sure that's exactly the case out there.
Okay. Any further? Representative Nicholas.
Mr. Chair, Don, do you have some figures on, just by chance, on what we've spent or what the growth curve has been towards paying for this particular project?
Mr. Chairman, I don't.
Okay. Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I tend to agree with Senator Burns. Even in their narrative, they indicate that this came into effect in 2004. And it's grown since then. It's an appropriation for grants to local predator management districts. We're not asking to eliminate the program, only asking to reduce the expenditure on it. I guess I would ask all staff also if they know what has come back from this program, if they've used all of the money or if there have been reversions.
Mr. Chairman, I believe we looked this up just in the past week, and there was only $100,000 of the roughly $6 million appropriation from the 15-16 biennium that was unexpended, unobligated.
Mr. Chair,
I'd
make either a friendly or a motion to amend to $1 million instead of $2 million on the cut.
Okay, there's a motion to amend. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been seconded. Okay, any more discussion? Everybody knows the issue.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perkins.
Just one question for staff. So, you know, looking at this, these are all the majority of this program, all, I think, 66, a little over 60, $6.6 million in this program is grants and aid, which is the 600 series. So there hasn't been a cut anywhere in this. Is that correct? In this particular program, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, it would be subject to the penny plan. I would also note that the governor took about $35,000, I think, and I believe that this committee also took an additional $50,000 or an additional $332,700, 5% of that amount.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman,
Stubbs,
along those lines, just so I'm assuming that this proposed cut is to the 600 series, the grant portion of the program, not the balance of the budget.
Yeah. So we're got an amendment to the amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
All those in favor raise your hand to reduce to 1 million. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That amendment is successful. So now we're on the amendment for $1 million reduction in the grants. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That's been adopted. Okay. Are there any other amendments then on the Department of Ag? Okay. Department of Revenue, page 13. Bottom of page 14, Miners Hospital Board.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the Department of Revenue, I would like to make a motion to add back in the property tax exemption for the poor. I believe that figure is about $2.1 million. This is the one that is means tested and is used by each of our counties.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
By Senator Hastert. Any further discussion? Discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. That motion has failed. Any other on Department of Revenue?
Okay, Miners Hospital Board. Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion, and I was I had a little brief conversation during markup about this, and the Miners Hospital, we need to I'd like to amend the part-time, remove the part-time and add two full-time, and add $45,207 that the fiscal note says that they would need in order to accommodate getting a full-time person in Sweetwater County, a full-time person in Campbell County. Currently, the Miners Hospital Board has allocated the director and then one or two part-time individuals, and they break that up between the two counties. With the ACA and the Internal Revenue Service changing the requirements on the health savings account, it's caused a tremendous amount of work for the Miners Hospital, and they get a considerable amount of walk-in business on both of those. The $45,207 would come out of the Miners Hospital fund, out of their funds, would be no impact to the general fund. So I guess I should have asked for a second before I did all that, Mr. Chairman. My apologies.
Is there a second? No, you're good. Second it? Okay. Continue. So the question, the amendment then on page 14, you can see the authorized employees. It says one full-time, two part-time. Those part-timers are in the two mining communities. You want to change those to full-time. So it would be three full-time.
Mr. Chairman, yes, and the dollar amount they provided was a biennial number of $45,207, and then that would change. That would be the difference in the part-time to full-time. And it's just, as the director was in here noting, that it's the amount of work because of the federal mandates that change what we need to do.
These are all miners board fees. These are not general funds.
Correct, Mr. Chairman. Okay. These are miner board fees and coming out of their fund.
Any other discussion or questions? Okay. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
That's been adopted. Raise your hand. All those in favor. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hold on. Let me see that again. Raise your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That motion is passed.
Okay.
Right here. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, all right. I like that question. Okay. Senator Hastert, so any other amendments on Miners Hospital Board? Okay. Attorney General, Section 15. Any amendments? Okay. On page 15, Department of Environmental Quality. Any amendments? Okay. 23, Public Service Commission. I'm sorry, Department of Audit, the bottom of page 16, section 21, section 23, Public Service Commission, section 24, State Parks and Cultural Resources.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Burns.
I would like to make an amendment on section, on footnote number 4. This is the We the People program.
Okay.
We cut this back to $50,000 one time for 1 year. I would make the motion to kick it back up to $100,000. If I can get a second, I'll
second.
Explain.
Been
Thank
seconded?
You. Mr. Chairman, I went into some more, or I went back to some of the people about that money and where that money is spent and how that money is spent, because this committee was under the impression that $50,000 was spent on the state winners going to Washington and participating in the nationals. That's not the case. As a matter of fact, the winning team only gets $3,000 toward their – no, I'm sorry, $4,000 toward their expenses going to Washington. The rest of the money is actually spent on competitions here in the state, and it's to provide to the various schools, including Natrona and Rock Springs and Laramie, to – participate in the regionals. There's actually three levels. There's the regional, then there's the states, then there's the national. This is only for the regional. It works out to about $2,000 to $3,000 per school, and it provides the materials to the teachers and also provides some training to the teachers. It also provides materials to the kids, and some of the kids get materials, get the materials. They may not even compete, but they do get that. So this is money that is spent here in the state, and it doesn't just go to the winners, and it just doesn't go to airplane tickets and hotels in Washington. Only 4,000 of that does. That being said, this is a good program, and we're spending the money out of the school foundation account, and I would ask that we put the other $50,000 back in for the second half of the biennium.
Okay, any more discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That's been adopted. Okay. Any further amendments? Okay, we're on Section 27, School Facilities. Section 29, Wyoming Water Development. Section 32, Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, on page 20 now. Section 37, State Engineer. Section 39, Wildlife Natural Resource Trust. Section 40, Game and Fish Commission. Section 41, Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety. We have a technical correction on this page 22. That number should not be $178,579, but is it $147,29?
Yes, and this was just a staff error, so I don't think you need a
okay,
motion.
Okay, so we're good? Okay, and then any amendments then on fire prevention? Section 44, insurance. Section 45, Department of Transportation. I have one question here, I guess, and I'll make an amendment and see if it's basically on the use of the aircraft by limiting it to only certain agencies. And if I can get a second, I'll explain it. Okay, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Basically, what I'd like to do is looking at the flight logs, at this time, I want to just charge the full rate, which is the $3,900 and some dollars. That's what depreciation, the full rate, on the four elected offices, and other than the governor. And so that's my plan. I don't want to charge that. I'm not going to put that on the Board of Parole or those, but those four, I think particularly the governor, I think it's important that he's in all our communities, and but I think for the other four electeds, I think charge the full rate, and so if those plane flights occur, they're going to be pretty important so that's my motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burkhardt.
I was waiting for the second, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
It's been seconded.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just curious, the intent being if only one of the elected officials flies, but the plane is full with other agency personnel from multiple agencies, that rate still applies to that entire flight?
I think those things are generally split out if they happen. So,
and that, Mr. Chairman, that's what I'm asking, is the split at that 3,900 level, or?
And so the agencies I'm talking about, two, three, four, and 206. Those would all pay the full rate.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm not clear. So agency 206 fills three of the seats, and agency 45 fills the others. Does 45 get charged at the
they would all pay their proportional share.
Okay.
Like they currently do. It's just their rate is higher for that.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to be clear.
I mean, that's the way we work it, but Representative Connell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, just a clarification question. Does this include every employee of the WDE or only the superintendent?
Includes the entire agency, 206.
Okay.
Okay. Representative Moniz.
So What does the rate apply to the balance of the agencies that use the plane? Does this affect them at all?
To the balance of the agency?
The rest of the agencies, the YDOT or...
Didn't include them at all.
So any other agency that uses it uses what?
Uses the fee that's set by YDOT. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I...
Go ahead, Representative Nicholas.
I'm just going to rise in opposition to the motion. It seems to me that we really... I don't know if $3,900 is the right number, but we ought to increase the cost to everyone that flies it to represent a true proportion or a closer proportion of what the costs are. And if you look at the flight numbers, I mean, YDOT is 117 legs, UW is 79 legs, and Border Patrol is 53. The elected officials you're talking about, it's only about 22 combined on all those legs. And so the real folks that are using it and the real folks that we're subsidizing are the folks that use it the most, other than the governor. And so... It just seems to me that we ought to charge more for what the realistic costs are. And plus, if we charge UW and YDOT more, who use it the most, then that'll come out of their basically their block funds or their federal funds, and it'll be a better the bottom line for us as our general fund. So it's to me that we're not getting to the underlying cost issue, and we're not doing really cost savings. We're just transferring dollars, whereas we can actually save dollars if we do it a little bit differently.
Mr. Chairman?
Any discussion? Senator Burns?
I'd like to amend your amendment.
Okay.
I'd just like to charge $2,500 flat fee for everybody. It's not all the way up to the full price, but it is more realistic. It's about midway between what the actual cost is and what they're currently charging, and I think they're currently charging too low.
Okay, so that's been seconded. Any more discussion on the amendment to the amendment? All those in favor
This is for everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No. That's failed. Any other amendments? We're on the amendment now. Okay, all those in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
That's failed. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
I couldn't hear really this side of the room.
Mr. Chairman?
Let's have a show of hands. All those in favor. Was it just me or you?
It was just that senator.
1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, that failed.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Byrne.
I don't know what direction this committee wants to go, so let's try it to split the baby. $2,000. $2,000 per hour for all the agencies.
Okay, is there a second?
Mr.
Okay,
Chair.
Okay, go ahead. Discussion.
I mean, this is only at $2,000 an hour. It's half of the actual cost. And it just doesn't make sense to me that we use numbers that are incorrect. I mean, let's at least charge half of what it costs to fly these planes to people who are flying them.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Senator Burns.
I think that $1,400 figure, I don't know how old that is, but I'm thinking inflation by itself should cover some of the distance between the $1,400 and the $2,000.
Okay. I think a lot of it's fuel, too. I mean, there's no doubt. But okay,
Mr. Chairman, I'd support the motion because we've talked extensively in here about the travel budgets and the amount of money spent on travel, and I think this helps control it. I think the call it superfluous travel may go away, and it would really be needed travel. And, again, we're only recouping half the costs, so I think this is reasonable.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On and against, we've already done a global cut in the 200 series. This just takes another deeper cut already in travel. Maybe next year.
Mr. Chairman?
You know, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, my biggest problem is that it includes the governor, and I just can't get – I don't think that's appropriate.
You know, I'm going to vote against because I don't think it's going to slow anything down. I think it's going to take more money from other things. And I think my idea was to get, you know, we have four electeds, and just to for sure slow that down because I think, you know, the other work can continue on. But so that's it. But any more discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
It's failed. Okay. Any other motions on YDOT?
I give up.
I think I have too. So, okay. Okay, Department of Health, Section 48.
Mr. Chairman?
Was that Senator Wasserberger?
Yes, sir. I'm not sure where this goes, but I think it goes here. And so I'm going to move for – what's that?
In health?
Yes, Department of Health. I'm going to move for an appropriation of $640,000 for a two-year study to include claims data from the State of Wyoming Employees Health Plan. And does it go here or does it go?
Yeah, I think it could.
And I believe we had this amendment earlier for $700,000. This is a cut of $640,000. I guess I don't have a second, but I would ask for a second at this time.
Second.
Okay, it's been seconded. I'd like to make a friendly amendment. I think it'll be friendly. You know, I think learning more about this issue, the price is not that amount, and I think if we run this through the Department of Health, some of it could be paid for federal funds to include some of our population. So my amendment is to really direct the allow the department to do this and do it out of any reversions that occur in the 16 budget. So it would be cost neutral going ahead. So that's my friendly amendment. I hope it's friendly.
Well, it is. I hope.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I may talk on that.
Yeah.
You know, I've thought about this for a long time, and one of the things that shocked me about this budget was how much money we were spending statewide on health insurance. And I think we need to spend money on health insurance, and I think that's very important. But the goal of this is to lower costs for everyone, and I think the number that I found statewide was that we were spending, if you add in everybody that's on insurance, $625 million. And even if we can cut those costs by 2%, it would be a lot. I mean,
yeah.
And I think it could actually be a lot more than that. So I would urge everybody to support.
Well, we had this as an interim topic given to us by management council. We took testimony on this, I think, in our June meeting or whatever it was in Cheyenne, and we were still in room 204 then. I think there's a way to do that. This can get cheaper, and I think we get our health department kind of doing this, running the show on this deal. I think it'd be good. So, Representative Stubbs.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just think, I mean, this is one of those things. Really, we talk about inserting some consideration of costs, allowing educated consumers to be able to decide where they can get treatment and do it in a cost-effective manner. And you talk to employers across the state, and this is a practical solution. You get the state involved in this program to really open the doors of information so that they can make those informed choices. So this isn't just about state government. This is about helping facilitate employers across the state in doing this thing. So I think it's a good step in the right direction.
Okay. Any other discussion? Don?
Mr. Chairman, just a few clarifying items. Is this for the participation in a external claims database, or is this a internal study of, or is it a development of our own? I'm not 100%.
I think it could be any of those. Investigate it and kind of – that's how my understanding of it. I mean
– And, Mr. Chairman
– Chairman.
Senator Wasserberger.
Mr. Chairman, I think what we're trying to do here is to create a reliable multi-payer medical claims database that can be used to help policymakers and employers make data-driven decisions about health care and prices.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm confused. Are we going back now to then fund the – what's the name of the program that was presented to us?
I don't think necessarily. I think the more I've learned about this, I think a portion of this can be paid through for federal funds with our – because we have a lot of health care coming through our health department, Medicare and Medicaid. So I don't think necessarily so.
Well, that's not an answer.
But it doesn't preclude it.
Yeah, but it ought to preclude it because –
One thing is to study
it.
Well,
you
might
say it ought to preclude it.
I need to know what the motion is, and then who's going to make the decision and how much it's going to cost, because I don't understand the motion.
Okay. Go ahead. The motion, then, that was I amended. Go ahead, Representative Wasberger.
Well, someone throw me a lifeline.
Mr. Chairman, as I understood the motion, it was to it would permit participation in a multi-payer claims database if the health department determined that it made economic sense for the state to do that.
That's right. It doesn't require them, but allows them to investigate it and do it.
And Mr. Chairman, is there a cap on the dollars, or how much
they
can
do
it?
Well, I think that's a good question. I think you could, you know, he mentioned 750. I think you could put a cap on those reversions and say 400,000 or whatever the number is, not to exceed an amount of.
Mr. Chairman, I think the cap would be 640,000, up to 640,000 from federal reversions.
From reversions.
And Mr. Chair, where do you come up with the 640,000?
From reversions.
Where does that number come from?
Well, it comes from this study that we did and this handout.
Mr. Chairman, we didn't do a study on it. The only thing we received was from the group in Casper that was promoting
it. We've got a memo on it.
So can you show me what memo it is?
Or what? June meeting, I think. But
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator Wasserman, can you tell me what number of that is on the and in what file it is that was submitted to the
Mr. Chairman, it is from Mr. Don Richards, Budget and Fiscal Section Manager. His date is September 25th, 2015.
It's on SharePoint. Oh, Mr. Okay. Chairman, it can be found on your SharePoint for your October meeting handouts.
And Don, can you describe what it says or what it puts for?
Mr. Chairman, I can describe what I don't recall the actual text of the memo. What we did was identify other states that had created their own, other private organizations, surrounding states that had created a multi-payer claims database, either in law or voluntarily. And then we compared costs of the surrounding states. And I recall that the cost proposed of the original Wyoming organization was somewhat higher, and that was due to the fact that Wyoming was not going to do the analytics, but rather they were going to contract with the Montana group, and the Montana group was going to do the analytics.
And I don't think this amendment requires that at all. I think it's still, and it puts it in the department now to go out if they have reversions to really make the best deal for the state if it makes sense. That's really what this is. It gives them authority to do it.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd make a motion that we cap that at no more than $350,000 in the reversion.
General funds. General fund reversion.
General fund reversions.
Clarification on that motion. Well, is there a second for that one?
Second.
Clarification on that. I mean, ultimately, are you saying that I want to understand the motion? Is the motion that you would no more than $350,000 in general funds, but then if they can use federal reversions up to the 640, is that the motion, or is the motion that you're just capping the whole thing at 350 and saying it all has to be federal funds?
My motion is that no more than 350 of general fund reversions can be used to do it, and if they can have federal funds and do it, I don't care.
Okay. So that's the amendment to the amendment. What? And it's been seconded. Okay. All those in favor, say aye. Opposed?
Doesn't turn green. I guess it doesn't turn green.
Okay, that's failed. Okay, any other amendments?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to speak against the motion. The cost of the state as this system was presented was, I think, $22 per month per member of state employees in order to run this program. It was a lot of money in order to do something that we could, our discussion back then was we could do this internally if we wanted to. We don't need to join this particular crew to do it, and we could instruct the Department of Health to do it, and they could come back to us and tell us if it's reasonable or if they have the power to do it or what the cost efficiencies are, and yet to just jump in and throw our money behind the program. Back then, we said no. I mean, we had it presented to us, and right now we're shooting off the top of the cup because we can't remember what our discussions were, but we killed this thing before, and so it's just coming back kind of as a hairbinger without being fully informed on it. I'm opposed to it.
Representative Nicholas, I think we never took a vote on it. We never took a position on it. We took it as information.
Well, we took an informal poll on it at that time.
I don't recall that.
It's my recollection, Chairman.
And this doesn't force us to join any out-of-state group or any group. That amendment doesn't say that. It gives us authority to the Department of Health. And that's what the amendment is. So any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman, sorry, I didn't know you probably don't want to hear from me on this, but I'd give this advice if this amendment was brought to the floor. As far as I understand the amendment, we're creating a new program within the budget bill here, and I think that implicates some issues under Article 3, Section 34.
Okay. So it's blinking yellow.
Probably not, Mr. Chairman.
Kind of orange-ish.
Orange?
Now we've got some sphincter stuff going on again.
Careful. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
It's failed. I do have another amendment, and it's to on the MMIS match. I think we got to make sure, I've heard from the department, we want to make sure it's a 90% federal, 10% general fund. We want to make sure we've given that flexibility to the department on this match. And I would also like that to extend, if there's any 2016 reversions, we could find our 10% out of those reversions. I think that makes sense. That can lower our budget going forward on that. So that's my motion on that. And we heard about the MMIS program in our budget. And is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any more discussion on that? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, it's been adopted. One other thing I'd like to talk about are community health centers. Governor's request was $1 million to go to these community health centers that provide health care to basically the, you know, low-income folks in Wyoming. And I think the governor asked for $1 million increase. I'm not asking for an increase. I'm just saying up to $500,000 of any reversions that occur could help fulfill that request, go to these community health centers. So that's my amendment.
Mr. Chair, and these reversions are coming from...
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, second. Go ahead, Representative.
Could you just explain where, again, these reversions would be coming from?
I don't know if there will be reversions. I'm just saying if there is... there's $20 million already pulled out of this agency for the shortfall. So I don't know. But I'm just, if there is, I think that'd be, one small part we could do. So that's it. That's all I'm doing.
Question.
Okay, I had a second. Any other? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, that's failed. And then my last one in the Department of Health. I'd like the department to bring us back information. I'd like them to study this issue and bring us back information do it internally, to bring us back some more information on really what's called, I think Vermont calls it their Green Mountain Plan, but how would something like that work in the state of Wyoming? And I've had a lot of private employers in the state say, why can't I join the state health plan, covering half the people in the state anyway? And I don't know the answer to that, and I don't know.
And I know there's a lot of stigma, people call this and that, but I'd like to just kind of see a report on that, what something like that would look at, and just for information purposes. So that's my motion.
So
seconded by Representative Nicholas. Okay.
Senator. So my understanding, the motion is to do a study of opening up the state health plan to the public? Okay.
It is, and I don't know what that all even looks like. That's what I'd like to see what it looks like.
You know, Mr. Chairman,
go ahead, Representative Greer.
I think along those lines, what we'd like to know is how many people are covered by insurance.
Exactly.
Who's covered by, you know, Blue Cross Blue Shield? Who's covered by other plans? Who's covered by the state plans? Who, you know, what self-insurance plans are out there? I mean, it'd be nice to get a breakdown of those. Of those numbers, of where our population, how our population's covered.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And I don't know if that information's available, but it'd be pretty helpful.
And so as we keep working this healthcare issue, I think it's just some more info that we got to get pulled together. So that's what I want them to bring a report back. So that's it, to bring us a report on that kind of that issue. Any other discussion? Go ahead, Senator Burrell. You can't require reports anymore?
No, I don't know about that, Mr. Chairman. I think you probably can, especially if it's got a real relationship to an appropriation that's included within the bill. I don't know if this one, you know, necessarily does, but it's definitely about the expenditure of state funds. I am a little concerned about being prescriptive, but I guess if I had to rate this one, I'd say yellow.
Okay. And, you know, I think in doing this report, obviously work with our state insurance guys, Ralph Hayes shop, all those, and just to see what this, get the info for us and for the whole legislature. Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Senator Perkins.
I don't have any problem asking for the report. I'm just, why do you want it in the budget bill?
Because we spend $1 billion a biennium in the health department. And in our insurance piece, and a lot of that, we want to learn more about it. I mean, we get criticized for not having any our own plan or any options. I'd like to learn more about this option.
And Mr. Chairman, I mean,
if it is an option, I don't even know.
Well, did you have reason to believe that if we just asked for that in our first meeting of the year, they wouldn't provide it to us?
I suppose. I don't know. I guess same thing. Yeah. Any other discussion? Okay. Sensing you're ready to vote. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, that's been adopted. Okay. I guess it's 10:02. So we'll be back at noon, 11:02. We'll be back at noon recess. Thank you.